Lectionary Lab Live is recorded in the studios of the 405 Oxford Group, Gainesville, Florida, and Brasstown, North Carolina, a Two Bubbas and a Bible production.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Man, we're going to talk a little text. Things are heating up. Literally, as we're moving through the summertime here, these are the texts for the fourth Sunday after Pentecost, June the 21st, 2015. Well, Bubba, we got plenty of good stuff to talk about. Or is it bad stuff? Or is it good and bad? This kind of like, well, I got some good news and I got some bad news. Stuff for today. What do you want to say, or what are you thinking about as we get ready to jump into the text for preaching this week?
Well, first thing I want to mention is just as it often happens through the summer, there's a secular day to pay
Correct.
A little bit of attention to, many of us. It's Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day. Yep.
Pay a little attention there. The sermon I put on the blog doesn't directly refer to it. I just tell a story about me and my daddy.
Yeah.
And, without saying it's Father's Day. And that sort of works. Something along those lines. As we've said before, a tip of the hat.
Tip of the hat.
Absolutely. You know, and you can safely sing Eternal Father Strong to Save. You know, you got to see and you got daddy. It's a perfect hymn for today.
And all the Navy guys will love you.
Themes for today are faith and trust in the face of adversity, struggle, and confusion. Faith or trust in the face of adversity, struggle, and confusion.
Now, who doesn't want to line up to hear a sermon about that?
I'm guessing most people would at some level.
Well, I'm actually, yeah. I mean, this is seriously. The texts do talk a lot about that, those very issues, adversity and struggle. And for people of faith, we do have to come in and say, what difference does this make? You know, it's kind of our ultimate question. What difference does this make? And we are looking for some good news in the midst of hard times.
And, you know, cut it down, you know, Rabbi Kushner.
Right.
But why bad things happen to good people?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Job and the rest of our text asked a different question. It's why are good people good in the face of all the bad?
Mm-hmm.
That's a different question.
It is.
You know, and I'm not arguing with Kushner. I'm coming on the side. You know, his question says we're basically good people, so bad things shouldn't happen to us.
Right.
And our text today talking a little different direction. You've got Job, you know, I've always loved that. Who do you think you are? Answer
from
God. We'll explore that. The Psalm talks about, you know, the storm, a lot of great stuff about the storm and salvation at the end. Second Corinthians, Paul lists all these adversities and contrast in which you hold on and have faith.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you've got, Mark's gospel, in which you have Jesus asleep, not at the wheel, but in the stern, and the disciples' reaction to that and what we can do with exploring that. So it's, how do you have faith in the midst of the stuff that happens in the world that, you know, when your plans don't work out and things go awry?
Absolutely. Cause they will. That's the world we live in. So, let's jump in then. Let's go back there to Brother Job, who has been pretty bold to argue with God and confront God and, you know, just making an honest case. This is a sort of a courtroom kind of setting.
Yep.
And so now it's God's turn.
Well, every time I hear or start reading Job 38, I think of a t-shirt my wife had when the boys were little. And it had a mama bear with a roller pin in her hand and a little baby bear looking up. And the caption was, because I'm the mama bear, that's why.
So
we all remember the 2-year-olds. Why? And part of this sounds like that kind of answer, doesn't it?
Well, God's got. All right. You've had your say. Now be seated.
Because I'm the God, that's why.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's different in the larger context. you know, alone, this text, these 1 through 11, is really a great piece about God and creation and humanity and the mystery of that relationship. And it's not so much putting humanity in its place in a negative way. It's a reminder that here's the world and here we are. And these are all these things that are happening. And the question of how did this get here? And if there is a God and God put it all in place, how does that affect the way in which we relate to the world and what happens in it? And Job answer, the book of Job kind of answer is, if you have faith that God is in the midst of it, it changes the way you see the things that happen. Mm-hmm. In the context, the question of the book is not, I don't think is Kushner's question of why bad things happen to good people.
No.
The question of the book is Job faithful because he's blessed? Is Job blessed because he's faithful? Or do the two really not go together? One of the things that I've noted when people start talking about being blessed is they start mentioning, I've been blessed and because good things happened. Right. And is that the nature of being blessed? That's a real key question, because the text is saying perhaps blessedness is a different thing entirely from the way we measure the good life.
Right. Well, that's pretty much the implicit setup for the whole book of Job, is that here is unquestionably a godly person, unquestionably a person who is living the right way, and yet suffers these terrible consequences. And that was counter to the whole mindset of the time, and still pretty much counter to the way we see things today. Well, we think good people ought to have good things, and sometimes stuff happens.
Right.
And so, yes, it's much more about what are the choices we're going to continue to make, and what does it mean to live faithfully, and is it necessarily connected to the apparent outcomes? I like to think of it, and I believe this passage fits this. Job's story is about gaining perspective.
Yeah.
And the perspective is much larger than ours. Than what we normally have. And eventually, after Job finishes this dialogue with God, he basically says, very near the end, you know, I cover my mouth. I didn't really know what I was saying. He has gained a new perspective.
Right.
Again, back to our basic definition of repentance, if you will. A new mind, a new way of seeing things, and so Job is going to repent somewhat, not because he's been a terrible sinner.
No.
But because there's just a different perspective to gain here. So,
well, one of the questions underneath this is the answer of Job is that the evil that happens is, or what we perceive as evil, the struggle is a part of what it means to be faithful. That right. God created the darkness and the chaos, as well as the light. And so there's this question that we have to struggle with, is how do we perceive the life that we're living through? And it's difficult sometimes for us to do other than do kind of dualities where if I'm good, these good things will happen. And if I'm bad, these bad things will happen. So I better be good. And it's not so much the moral good that we learned in Sunday school, it's about we deserve what we get, you know, and we do this all the time, you know, about economics, about education, about all kinds of life, and we push it against ourselves. And the book of Job questions that whole individual power to control.
Yeah.
And we don't have that individual power to control, and it's about faithfulness is what God calls us to, not necessarily success.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Anything else about this language? Again, it really does put
it's it. Beautiful.
If you want to talk about destroying our illusions of control, I just love the questions by this ancient writer are fantastic. So where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? We talked last week's show about the resting on the backs of turtles and stuff like that. What holds the earth up from our perspective?
Well, one of the lines that I love, I just looked at it and I just read an email from somebody and so it tied together. Gird up your loins like a man.
Right.
And I was thinking, oh, yeah, put on your big boy pants.
We're going to go at it.
Gird up your loins like a man. Put your big boy pants on and stop whining, and let's talk about this.
Yeah, the old guys used to say, hit your britches up, son, when I was growing up. Yeah, that's it.
And then actually the email I got was from a female pastor who said, I'm going to have to just put on my big girl panties.
Well, there you go.
And go deal with this. Yeah. And so I was amused when I read gird up your loins.
Yeah.
Like an adult. We should change that to gird up your loins like an adult.
Yeah. This is for the grown-ups now. We're going to have a grown-up discussion, son. That's right. Maybe we often talk about what's the entree into the text. If you're working with this text, it's not a bad analogy to think about the parent. I remember the first day I saw my oldest son as an adult. Yeah. I remember the day the shift happened. And from that day forward, our conversations became different. We began to talk on a different level. And that's a possible entree into this text. This is God saying, okay, Job, it's time for us to have a different discussion now. We're going to take it to a different level.
If you're more polite than I am, and don't want to say big boy pants. I would do that personally, but you might talk about, you know, when little boys wore shorts and then to put on their long pants.
Right.
Symbol of growing up.
Yeah, that's it. No, that's it. Well, so Job here is a passage that is about gaining perspective, about moving to a different level, about backing off from the scene. And as you say, maybe getting past the initial question, why have these bad things happened? And to step back and to see what maybe is deeper, what's going on here. What do we learn about God? What do we learn about God's relationship with God's people from this text? That's a good question to ask. Let's move on then to the companion Psalm 107.
107 is a Thanksgiving psalm that... you know, the intro, 1-3, is to the entire psalm. And then it has sections. It has a section of peril and a section on imprisonment and a section on illness. And then it comes to our today's section, trouble at sea. Now, it's obvious that picked the trouble at sea because of our gospel lesson.
Right.
And tying to that and also... kind of like God's still in charge of everything. So that ties back to the Job. So these flow together. A beautiful description of trouble at sea. Some went down to the sea in ships, plying their trade. It's beautiful poetry, even in English, you know, down to the sea in ships and wonderful works. And it looks lovely. And then verse 25, God spoke and a stormy wind arose. It's kind of like, oh, everything's calm. Wait, whoa. Trouble. And I love 27. They staggered and reeled like drunkards, and all their skill was of no avail. That's the human situation.
Yeah.
At some point, you just can't fix it. They cried to the Lord, and you delivered them from their distress. And then it moves on, and then the Thanksgiving. So homiletically, there's a way that's a moving through this story, this psalm kind of narratively and talk about what are the storms in our lives and what situations, because this does a beautiful job of talking about how we're going along. Everything looks great. And then something happens and we're unable to control and we call out to the Lord. And there's that moment.
Yeah.
That moment, that turn in which you realize, not only am I not in control now, I'm never really in control at all.
See, I think that's it. I think these passages today challenge us and push us, because you can talk about a storm and it can be sort of like what we get here in Florida on summer afternoons. It can be a little thunder shower. And it's maybe more of an inconvenience than anything else, you know. Well, I can't go out yet. It's raining. I'll wait and it'll pass. And so that, I mean, that's a storm, but we're talking here more like this is much more than an inconvenience. This is life threatening. This is at their wit's end. This is what we'll see when we get to the gospel just in a moment. The disciples are convinced they're going down with the ship. And so, again, I guess for me this week, I'm looking at it from this whole gaining a new perspective. Sometimes we, as human beings, we have to get threatened to realize that really and truly every single day we're kind of at our wit's end. We're in trouble without God's help, without God's presence. And there's something about that at the core of the gospel. It's not that we're sinners and we need to get beaten up about it all the time. Back to Job, well, you must have done this because you're bad. No, we live in a world that is malformed by sin, and we live in a world that is trouble. And without God, how will I be saved? Yeah. It really is that essential tension of the gospel. It's why we need good news, because we live in a world filled with bad news.
Well, you know, now I lay me down to sleep. You ever think about that? How gently, you know, little kids pray, teach them to pray that. And if I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Every day it could happen. And, you know, crisis moments just bring into a fuller focus what God's been saying to us all along. C.S. Lewis in The Problem of Pain says, in pain, God shouts to us through a megaphone what he's telling us all the time.
Right.
That we, that we're daily dependent upon God. And there come moments when we realize that. Flannery O'Connor was once asked why she had what someone called grotesque figures in her her stories. And she said, in the land of the deaf, one must shout to be heard.
Oh, give us ears to hear.
Yeah.
Well, as we move to Corinthians, the apostle knows a little bit about the exigencies of life, knows a little bit here. And this is one of those passages where if you're not careful, you can think Paul is just trying to sort of beat his own drum or toot his own horn. Or you can say, well, you know, these characters in the Bible, they had so much more in their lives than I do. I don't think that's the point. It is to connect us, and we all live here. But let's talk about this Corinthians passage.
Well, if you go back to 5:18, that part of the context, Paul says, all this is from God, and all this refers to the salvation and the life we live. And he's emphasis of Paul's theology is that God acts in Christ to save us, that God is acting in everything to save us. All this is from God. And he's trying to create within his readers a perspective. And, you know, one of the fun things with Corinthians is you're reading half of a correspondence. It's like listening to half of a phone call when you're sitting in the living room with your wife or husband or somebody, you know, and you're hearing them talk and you hear half the conversation and you sort of know who they're talking to. So you can guess at the other half, but not entirely. So we're not exactly sure what the Corinthians have said to Paul, that he's responding to, but a pretty good guess is as a young church, they're having some troubles and they're being oppressed and things are difficult. And so he's trying to give them encouragement and he's talking about how God has acted in Christ to save us.
Right.
And through all of that, and then because he's got this, now is the acceptable time. See, now is the time of salvation. We are putting no obstacle. Then three. So we being not the imperial we, but he and the other missionaries and people he works with. And this whole list, you can see it begins with afflictions and then it comes by purity, knowledge, patience, kindness. He's making a contrast of saying these things are all here. And we overcome them through what? The gifts of the Spirit. There's not a fully realized kind of Trinitarian doctrine in Paul, not a fully realized Christology, but it's all there. He's talking, because these are all, these kind of things are what he later, other times, calls the gifts of the Spirit.
Right.
And so what Paul's working with here is God is working to save the whole world through us, not just the disciples, but us, the church. We are doing these things, and it's a struggle, and God is in the midst of it. Salvation happens. We are all the servants of God, and he's inviting people to join in this thing instead of saying, what am I getting out of this? And I'm getting this hard troubles because I've become a Christian. He's saying, join in. God's working through us for the salvation of the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's his point there.
Yeah. Yeah. You, again, you can imagine people going, hey, this is not what I signed up for. It's not going to get any better than this, I'm going to go try something else. And he's like, wait, don't accept this grace of God in vain. Don't give up. And you're right. He's trying to make some connections and help us to see how God is at work in the midst of these things. And the weapons that we have, the tools that we have, these weapons of righteousness that he talks about, they are these powerful spiritual gifts. They've been gifted to us. They are part of what God has given us. And I love one of the points you're making. When we read Paul, and since we've got so many of his writings in the New Testament, you kind of realize when you're seeing his thought in development. And you can kind of cross-reference one to the other. This is why later Paul writes, in everything, give thanks.
Right.
Not for every little detail. You don't have to be grateful you got beaten or thrown into prison. But in the midst of that, I look and I see how God is present. And through patience and kindness and genuine love and truthful speech and all these sorts of things, God does do a work.
Yeah, and in verses 7 through 10, he plays with a kind of Roman rhetorical device. You know, he's got the right and the left where we have these weapons, and he's starting to play with that both sides and he says, in honor and dishonor, in ill repute and good repute, imposters yet true, unknown, known, dying, alive, punished, not killed, sorrowful, rejoicing, poor, rich. And what he said, whatever. In the midst of this, it's all from God. Back to 5:18. And the last piece, 11, the heart's wide open. I think if you're going to talk about this text, you have to say, what is the relationship between Paul and the people he's talking to? What is he chiding? And what he's saying is, my heart's wide open to you. And I invite you to open your heart wide to me. Yeah. And the risk one takes for the ministry of reconciliation. And that's right in there. In return, I speak to you to open wide your hearts also. Yeah. That issue of closed hearts and open hearts is a big one here.
Well, it's similar to this moving to a deeper level that we saw all the way back in Job. God was not merely chiding Job or putting him down. God is saying, let's take this to a new level. And I see the apostle doing the same thing here. Look, I'm opening my heart wide to you here. We're talking about real stuff now. This is real life. Open your heart too. Let's move together to this next level. Very consistent with what we're seeing. Well, we better finish up with the sort of seminal theme story for today from the gospel, Jesus and a literal storm in life.
Yes. Well, I always think of the old gospel hymn, when the storms of life are raging.
Mm-hmm.
When I come to this one, there's another. I'm making hymn suggestions today, too.
There you go. I'm marking them down, Bubba. We'll see what happens on the show.
Well, for much of the people in the world in these times, the sea was full of evil forces. It was demonic. I mean, you can see these stories talking about, you know, Jonah and the storm at sea, Paul's in a shipwreck, you know, and when Jesus gets on the sea, I mean, we can understand that. They had very little technology to deal with the sea. And to tell you the truth, I don't like getting on a boat too much myself. You know, it's a lot of water out there, just me and this I still haven't figured out how metal floats. It just drives me crazy. So the sea equals evil forces and demonic. God has power over the sea. We see this in the Psalm and in the Old Testament. Jesus has demonstrated power over the sea. Wow. Jesus has God's power. That's kind of a point one in the kind of early time part here in Mark of trying to reveal or a sign of who Jesus is.
Right.
Okay. So there's that kind of logic. But a different thing here is this great image. And I think the writer of Mark's gospel takes this story, which is, I assume, a true story, but takes this story and frames it in such a way that it's aimed at the early church after the absence of Jesus. And they're going through some storms.
Right.
You know, and so here you have, and this image of the church as a boat, as the nave. You know, we in the liturgical churches, we call the worship space the nave, mm-hmm. and from navy. So here they are. Our disciples, an early, tiny group in a hostile environment of wind, wave, and water. And they're in the sea, and what happens? So, and Jesus is asleep in the stern. Mm-hmm. And then the questions, guys. What? So that's an image of the church. Here are the disciples. They're at sea. There's the storms around them. And where is God? You know, where is Jesus? This is the early church's question. In this story, I love the three questions. Our question, the disciples' question, when they wake up, Jesus is, do you not care?
Right.
An assumption that when things aren't going the way we want them to, or when things are difficult, is God does not care.
Right.
Do you not care? Jesus responds, why are you afraid? Have you no faith? There's the dynamic of life. Does God care? And was it list of meals? Mm-hmm. Can God be trusted?
That's right.
That we keep coming, question. Circling back to that question. Mm-hmm.
Well, and then you're right. Though it's great to focus on those questions. There's a fourth question that ends the passage when they're all going, who is this?
Exactly.
Who is this guy? The wind and the sea. Did you see that? It was another one of my Vanderbilt professors, David Buttrick, that pointed out the language here. When Jesus wakes up, and we can all relate to that, you know, being waked up out of a nap when you're dead tired, you know, he's a little irritable. And we've got this translation, peace. Be still, even though it uses exclamation points. That's kind of like what you would say to the dog when the dog is barking and wakes you up. Hey, sit down. Be quiet.
Well, you know? and the question I have is, was he talking to the wind?
Yeah.
Was he talking to them?
Whoever he was talking to, it all got quiet.
He spoke up, rebuked the wind, and said to the sea, that might be editorializing.
That's it.
He was mad at the people that woke him up. I've been working and you wake me up just for this?
Yeah, what's wrong with you? Why are you afraid? So we're all also asking that question again, a deeper understanding. We stop sometime and say, wow, who is this God that is with us? Who is this? Yeah.
Yeah. And in this case, they're looking at Jesus, and that's that revelatory piece in Mark's mm-hmm. gospel about as it becomes more and more clear who Jesus is. Mm-hmm. But for us, we think we know who that is. We've been through catechism. We have a little more Christology than Paul. But the question that comes over and over again, who is God in terms of what is God doing? What is the nature of God? How does God relate? Mm-hmm. You know, those are the kind of questions when we say, ultimately, that why is this happening? And how do I fit with God in the midst of this? That's the same question.
Yep.
Who is this?
Well, we are invited in by these texts on this day to a little bit deeper consideration, to back off a little bit and ask ourselves, who is this? Who is this Jesus we're worshiping and following? Good stuff, Bubba. I don't reckon there's much else for us to do other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Mama Told Me by Frank Anea. We go out this session with Miles and Miles of Texas. This one's for you, Brother Cliff, and all your hard-working Texas friends. Performed by Asleep at the Wheel.
I'm born in Louisiana, down on the Ohio. Raised on shrimps, catfish, Mammy's good gumbo. I got the rambling fever, sent by the Ma and Pa. Cross that old Red River, well, this is what I saw. I saw miles and miles of Texas, all the stars up in the sky. I saw miles and miles of Texas, gonna live. Into Cowtown, the cradle of the West. I just ask any cowboy, he'll tell you it's the best. I met a Texas beauty, I got friendly with her paw. I looked into her big blue eyes, and this is what I saw. I saw miles and miles of Texas, all the stars up in the sky. I saw miles. Texas, gonna live here till I die. Oh, Murphy, yeah. I started taming broncos. I made every rodeo until I met a tough one. You know his name is Devil Joe. Well, I grabbed hold of his bridle, just to ride this old outlaw. Threw me from the saddle, and this is what I saw. I saw miles and miles of Texas, all the stars up in the sky. Texas.